SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Belmont Park, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com, and the long road that I suppose for us started, where was our first stop this year? I guess it was New Orleans after the NHC. Yeah, February, and then everywhere else from Arkansas to Florida to Tampa, two stops in Florida, and so on, all the way through Louisville, Baltimore, and here in Elmont, 24 hours out from Belmont Stakes Day. But we're underway with the racing festival, and we've got a weekend preview at the races that is going to give you a little bit of everything. But we can't come to New York ever, can't come through this stopover without a visit from Nicholas Pizzito, who joins us now. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. So thank you for the introduction. I appreciate that very much.
We've had so many terrific conversations about the Belmont Stakes over the years, and of course your two wins, your seven seconds.
Yeah.
How many thirds?
A couple.
Two or three.
Yeah. A couple of fourths, too.
The record in this race, outstanding. Todd Pletcher accruing that kind of a record as well,
sure,
with three wins and the 3 seconds and or 6 seconds or whatever it is. This race is not a vintage edition, quote-unquote, but I will say this. Mm-hmm. In going through some charts, I recognize the fact that there's been plenty of years where there isn't exactly, the best 3-year-olds, that came together. There's been two or three headliners and a lot of, as Andy would say, a lot of dreck. Hazarai, what's your thought of this field?
Well, I mean, I'd love to have any one of them. You know what I'm saying? As a
there
trainer,
you go.
As a trainer. But, you know, it's funny, and thank you for, talking about our Belmont wins. And when we won those, when I say we, obviously you can't do it yourself, and Birdstone had beaten Smarty Jones, and then, of course, the Tara had beaten Big Brown, there was a lot of drama because of the Triple Crown. Now, Bob comes along, knocks a couple out in a couple of years, and then we have this situation, other than the disqualification and then whatever. You have to build up on it. In other words, you have to find something to
talk about. As a storyline, yeah.
Horse racing is bigger. The game's bigger than everything. So the actual sport, when you have 3-year-olds that are competing, you take, for instance, this War of Will, right, that won the Preakness. He could be an exceptional 3-year-old. And he was involved in whatever he was involved in. And we'll see. So that's like one storyline. Thaddeus, obviously, it's so great a horse right now, on paper. You know what I'm saying? And then there's these, as we would say, you mentioned Todd Pletcher has a couple, and this one has a couple. And the Japanese horse happens to be in my barn. That's a show in itself. You know
watching how they operate, because it's unusual.
Yeah, that's unreal. And, it's almost like I walk in here and it's, I've been in that barn forever and it's like a peace treaty almost, I want to go in there off of my whatever. But I think, Steve, the thing about it is it's still a mile and a half, which is a unique race, the classic itself. And it is what they say to test the champions. So let's say a Thaddeus emerges or War Will, looks really good. Well, at least you got something to build on that way. Like maybe these are top horses, you know what I'm saying? But like I said a little while ago, I'd like to have any one of them. So So
you also don't know until you get well down the road. And one of the things we've been, one of the drums we've been banging in recent weeks is how last year's three-year-olds suddenly were halfway through their four-year-old year, and some of them are beginning to show that they were good horses all along.
Absolutely.
But the horses also age and mature on different schedules.
Yeah.
And, you know, for all of the confusion, I'm not going to say bashing or questions that this race takes, you know, where people say, oh, they'll never race a mile and a half again. Okay. But there's also a case to be made that there's horses that have succeeded here because the configuration and the mile and a half itself, the 12 furlongs, is not something that obviously they've run up till now. And so until all of a sudden they go past that 9 furlong mark and then past the quarter pole and then, you know, the last 16th, and they just keep going. You know, horses don't have to have one turn speed. They don't have to, not every horse has to be, you know, completely adroit and adept at you know, at every single stop. I mean, there's only a few precisionists around and a few Dr. Fagers
that
were effective from 6 furlongs to a mile and a quarter. What did you see in the various, I mean, we said 7, 10, you've hit the board in this 12 or 13 times.
Yeah.
What do you see in a young three-year-old that says to you, this horse could be effective going 12 furlongs?
Well, I think, you know, obviously we start with the pedigree. You know that. You start with the pedigree. And, of course, the horse's demeanor. You might, you know, folks out there might say, what do you mean demeanor? Well, if he's a real high-strung horse, it's kind of tough going a mile and a half. You burn a lot of energy.
They need to switch off.
So if he's, you know, if he's nice around the barn, or he's, you know, he knows what how to do, he knows what to do with his work, and he's not, you know, too high-strung, because the thoroughbred is high-strung, they probably can get the distance a lot easier than most of them. But there's been a lot of horses that have hit the board. You talk about, you know, seconds, thirds, and fourths. Louis Couture's finished fourth in this race, and he was a marvelous three-year-old, as you know. And he wound up winning the Jim Danny, got beaten the Travers, and then wound up getting beat a nose in the Classic. Alphabet Suit won, and Cigar was third. He was second. So there could be good horses coming out of here. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, exactly.
Even though they, you know, they might not be spectacular in name right now, you know, they could possibly be something down the road.
And that's, you know, that's one of the things about this that makes it fun and unusual, because in addition to the two Triple Crown tries and the Datara win, it was under a circumstance where, you know, Big Brown was right, kind of coming apart at the seams. Yeah. Everything was kind of really between the hoof, and then a miserably hot day that would unwind any number of horses. But when it came to Birdstone, I mean, that part of the history of the game, and at that point, a horse that everyone was fairly convinced was the right type to win the Triple Crown.
I heard your show the other day. You had Ron Anderson. A lot of people say, you know, he invented the game. You know, just kidding. No, I mean, but he runs racing. I mean, he's tremendous what he does. But he had said something I disagree with him, not because I was on the receiving end, but he said Stuart Elliott, I think if he had rode and he had watched the track, not really, because that was a mile and a half. And I think, you know, everything now is a statistic. If you look at how many graded races in America, just America, or probably around the world, and you're two in front coming for home, they usually hang on. It was just that last part, and that was Birdstone's pedigree that
kicked in,
and that was the Whitney blood. So, but it's interesting. I'm glad they don't shorten the race. Believe it or not,
no, they can't. They can't touch any of this.
Yeah, I like it.
And that's, you know, that's the best side effect of the Triple Crown. I know that you know, people were, you know, there was silly suggestions about what would happen. Could we get a Triple Crown winner? But the best part of having now two in recent years is that it completely quashed the stupidity about changing the timing, changing distances, any of that stuff. So that part got got put away.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. We were on World News Tonight, if you could believe it. Remember when California Chrome's owner had a meltdown?
Yes.
And then I said, and they wanted to change this and change that. I said, look, it could happen. You know, sports needs to be tough. You know, things that you achieve in sports are tough. And sure enough, the next year, here come American Pharoah.
They had that.
And then, of course, now you had Justify. But it's, look, the bell, and you're right about the undercard. The undercard is great racing. It's amazing, you know, all the good races they got. So that's good, you know, in a point. But I wouldn't be surprised, Steve, honestly, if something really great happens in that mile and a half race tomorrow. And then somebody emerges and just goes on. Could happen.
Among these races that I have with me, and I'm going to give everybody the rundown so they can understand what went into this. You know, the first win in the race came, of course, with Birdstone. However, your first board hit goes back to 1984 in
Morning
this
Bob.
Race. Morning Bob, I've seen the name but know nothing about him.
That was wild.
How long had you been? How long at that point have you been training?
Well, I started. Let's see. I mean, I won my first race, if you could believe it, when they called Liberty Bell. I was a young guy with black hair. Thank you for saying I still got my hair. 1973, I think, whatever it was. Not even. No, 1972, December. And I had won my first race. And, then we went on from there. And then, see, at that time, the trainer started, you had one horse, then you had two horses, then you had six, then you had 12, then you had 24, you know, and you moved up. Today it's a little different. The younger guys have a little bit of advantage. The way this business is structured, you know, you go right into training, you get a barn full of horses. You know, it's not the struggle that, you know, myself or Shug or somebody started out. You
sure.
Know, you start out with a lot of horses. But, no, that was, you know, so that's when I did that day. So that was amazing. But my first Morning Bob, that was interesting. That horse was trained by Woody Stevens. And these fellas I was working for bought that horse. And I inherited that horse. And that was my first try at a big race. And then I came back in 1990 with 36 Red. And we thought we were home free. And Go and Go came from Ireland.
Dermot Well.
Yeah, and beat us. And that started my second place finishes. And then the next year, Strike the Goal, he just got beat. And then Go for Gin was second in 94. So we just kept going on with these.
Star
Standard 95, that's right. And that's what I love about you. You know, I was thinking, who does Steve Bick remind me of? I said, you know what? Two guys, Larry King and Alan Dershowitz.
I said, that's some combination.
I said, whatever. I said, that's who he reminds me of. But any case, you know, the one thing that's really sad is, obviously I'm a big fan of yours. Not all the shows. I mean, I don't want to be hypocritical. You don't have a 7 for 7. You know, you don't go.
No, it's hard. Exactly. They all can't be.
Perfect
they all
shows.
Can't be Hall of Famers.
But you got the old hip, you know, the old Hilltop Award. But I don't see how, before we leave the earth, you can't get an Eclipse Award. And I'll tell you why. Racing, no one devotes itself to racing the way you do. And you've really come around and, you've put your time in and effort. I think if I asked everybody about you to grade you, you'd have a high grade.
Thank you. Thank you. I come a long way since giving you the melons
at
Saratoga. You'd walk by,
I'd
have one of the melons for you.
I felt sorry for John Ferrata because I always liked John. And I said to myself, I don't want to go on this Renegade radio show. I mean, here I am, Nick Zio. I'm on ABC, NBC, CBS, ESPN 1,000 times, whatever. I said, this guy wants me to go on a Renegade radio show? But now I'm a big fan.
I appreciate it.
So you won me over.
You're the best. I got to get an opinion about things overall right now, Nick.
Sure.
We have yesterday, situation in Santa Anita. Continues to just vex everybody. Everybody that works in the industry and works the way you have is a animal lover. So, to have to be assailed by, quote-unquote, animal lovers when they're trying to preach to people that that are the animals are their partners that they work with every day. What's your take on this and how to best respond? And, you know, we went through in 2012 here in New York, we went through the task force after having a similar spate of injuries. And, you know, they came out the other side to the point where the cold culture of racing in New York changed in regards to monitoring, you know, horses' status coming in.
I try to say it as openly and as difficult as this subject has become. So if you look at, you know, I was on a peer, you know, a contemporary of yours, you know, Mad Dog Radio, when this all started, I was on Chris's show. And he had, you know, asked me immediately about that. Immediately, you know, and I was trying to explain somehow sports, they go through crises, you know, and they've all had baseball, football, basketball, kinds of crises, this and that. And we're going through this, whatever. But here's what's really sad. It happened at Santa Anita. For whatever reason it happened, racetracks are very, very important. One of the reasons, Steve, if you take the animal. Now, there's nothing better than watching a thoroughbred animal race, correct? It's beautiful. It's a gorgeous sight. If you see the Belmont, Secretarians Belmont, it's unbelievable. But when you think about it, you know, it's an old cliche. It's a 1,000-pound animal. He's running 45 miles an hour with ankles as big as yours and I. Now, somebody said, well, then don't do that. Well, we've done it for 100 years, and we never had this.
Hundreds
of years. But
we never kept track also.
Yes,
we never kept track. But nobody was watching like vultures waiting for a mishap.
Right. And you're so correct, and we've never had this. And probably we never had kept track. Or even if we did, well, let's say we kept track in our minds and we never had this happen. It's one of the most unfortunate things. I mean, you've never seen it in your racetrack.
Well, just what we had here. The one in New York and that winter at Aqueduct was the first time that we had to deal with that.
Right. And at the end of the day, here's my Goomba. Goomba. But at the end of the day, when you put everything in perspective, and I just said to the folks out here, think about how many times they've raced and how many times we've never had that all these years, hundreds of years, as you said.
Yep.
So it is a misfortune. And I hate to say, you know what I'd like to say? I'm not counting anybody's money, but I could tell you what I would do, okay?
Yeah.
Santa Anita's going to close in a little while, right? They're having what they called one of the world's great days, Breeders' Cup days, a couple of days, at Santa Anita. So if I was just saying, I would say, look, here's the track again. We've gone down to the base.
Right, rebuilt.
No, we've gone down to the base.
Yep.
And it's just like this table here. It's like a pool table. And we've gotten the best base people in the world. It is as level as can be. And now we've taken all the samples from every other track that's been successful. We put it on there. And that is definitely the best we can do. And maybe you'll have a great Breeders' Cup. It might be to rest. I know what you're saying, and it's difficult.
We talked with Dale Romans yesterday, and it just seems like an invitation to fiasco.
I understand.
When it's avoidable. And
well, that's the only way they're going to do it.
Try to avoid
it. I mean,
if
they can't show that there's something different that could happen, I don't see how they. I'm with you because that's impossible to take that risk.
Agreed. It isn't even so much that anything has to be, you know, different, quote unquote. Even regular incidents, even if it's, you know, the one per thousand efforts, whether it's races or training, just the focus that'll be on the facility for their fall meet, for the autumn meet in September and October, it's not going to take anything. It's going to take one
incident
to then micro-focus on Breeders' Cup at the end of October, November.
Right. Well,
that's the problem.
Right.
And frankly, I think you need a wholesale. I think you need a wholesale change there from from every point on the compass.
But if I can just throw this out at you too, you're a positive guy.
Yes,
you are. But
yes, it's right.
We can't have doom and gloom in our sport, and that's right now what we see. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
That's one thing that has to be tried to at least erase that. We have to show all the goods. You know what I always said? You want to fix racing? Like, you know, we've always had the Lords of Racing, and I know a few of the Lords of Racing. They'd always ask me, what would you do? I said, really? I get a Coca-Cola bottle. I take Keeneland and Saratoga and let everybody drink it.
And Del Mar and
Oakland. And Del Mar, I'm sorry.
And Del Mar,
yeah, no, whatever.
Yep.
I'd get the best tracks in the world, put it in a Coca-Cola bottle, drink it, and now we... racing's fine again.
And but it's, in those, in, well, and you're,
I mean, think about that.
I understand. I completely understand.
There's
I completely
so many
understand.
Wonderful things. And that's, you know.
I know.
One
we,
of the
we know that. That yeah. We know that. And it's become difficult to communicate.
You do your
and,
job. You yeah. do it well. You speak the truth. You tell your report. Your report's almost like news. You report
it. Sure.
And what the sad thing is, it's a tough nut that we're up against.
Yes.
This is a tough crowd. It's a tough crowd.
Well, and
and believe it, there's nothing wrong with animal lovers. Don't get me wrong.
Of course not. Of course not.
So that's what I mean. It's a tough situation.
The problem is nobody's interested in learning anything,
that's
understanding,
right.
the, you know, and having the full picture. It's all soundbite and it's all splashy headlines and sensationalism, including from some high-minded
right.
sources. That's the problem, and we don't have a thoughtful, discerning audience to explain things to. And as we reiterate and have for years, the distance from the agrarian life, there's people that have never been on a farm, never seen a horse up close, wouldn't have a clue. They don't know. They don't know where their hamburgers coming from. They don't know where their chicken breasts are coming from. It's a bizarre scenario that and a selective outrage.
All right, could you hold that against them if they don't know?
No, you would hope to educate them.
That's right.
But they're not interested in being they their summary judgment, you know, based on sensationalism, and that's the biggest problem we've got. So Nick, a quick note. What about today with Lenstar?
He's not going to get in, Steve, because
no scratches.
Old. No scratches.
Okay. All right.
But it's okay. We'll stick around. He'll run next week. That'd be good.
2-year-olds? You getting geared up?
You know what? I'm trying. I don't have the stock I used to have, but I got a couple. Look, I have a couple of guys that are really are helping me. I call them the Cowboys.
You got Calumet started,
yeah,
right? Sending
Calumet is really, you know, really nice, and Eddie, and of course Mr. Kelly's. You ask anybody that works for them, they're just tremendous to work with. And they got a nice young trainer. I'm impressed with Jack. As you give him a good, you know, the young trainer.
Jack Sisterson.
Yeah, Jack Sisterson is a really good guy. But I'll tell you who's been helping me a lot, and I really am thankful for him. Toby Keith.
How about that?
That's right. So he still believes in me. That's cool. You know, one thing about it, it's like if I was a football coach, I'd be looking for Peyton Manning. If I was a manager, I'd be looking for Reggie Jackson. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
So whatever it is, I'll get one again, Steve.
We have every confidence. Nick, I appreciate it. Your official pick, Tacitus, Wardwell.
I'm going with the favorites, and probably for the third one is Sir Winston.
He looks good.
Yeah.
He looks good out there.
Go for those.
He looks good out there.
Thank you, Steve.
Nick Zito, always tremendous here, and we're gonna stay right here because we've got a little too much going on to take breaks. And Hammer and Jimmy Ventura are close by. We're going to get them. I got Satish also. Satish is going to visit here momentarily.
Hello.
Absolutely. So we'll do that. I think
I see you got Ron Anderson hanging out.
We had Ron the other day. We had the big Ron Anderson visit, which for years was
good.
One of the favorites.
Absolutely.
We'll stay here, and I'm going to give Jolan. We're gonna try. I think we might want to get Satish. I think because Jimmy and Hammer are yapping away over to my left, Pat Kelly on hand, and Chad Summers, and so forth. good to see you. And I can't tell if they're going to break away. All right, let's get to – I'm going to get to Satish right now because they're fully involved with the conversation. And I did tell Satish that we were looking at about 9:25. So let's keep this train somehow on the track if possible. Nick, thank you.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
Tremendous. Nick Zito, everybody. And while we wait for Satish, let me give you a couple of results from yesterday. We got things going here, and Chad Brown with both of the two turf stakes, except that Newspaper of Record got corralled again. And she ran well. She and Cambier Park, six lengths clear of everybody else, but Newspaper of Record going to have to figure out how to get her to sustain the front running. And at the mile in the eighth, her stablemate, Cambier Park. And what a big day it was for Larry Best. OXO, of course, OXO Equine, and in addition to winning the Wonder again. And he's been waiting for kind of a breakthrough for Cambier Park, knowing that, she's got a stablemate in Newspaper of Record who's been so tough. But in addition to that win, how about later on, Roaten with a very nice performance coming out of Oaklawn? And I didn't get a chance to ask Nick about his Oaklawn experience. We'll save that. But Rosario with Roaten, and very patient, 97 buyer. For Roaten, and that three-year-old now, I'm sure, will start to point toward the Jerkins, maybe the Amsterdam and the Allen Jerkins. This was 6.5 furlongs, big win. And then, of course, the other stake that Chad took down, this was significant form, and this was a fun race. Fire Key, there's Pat Kelly, who had her for the first few years. Fire Key and Broadway Run were dueling, and then came some late runs, Stella de Camel out of Chad's, and significant form. And as we talked with Mike Beer, Mike will be here later. So significant form gets that elusive next win, and had been away since November. So a good way to start her four-year-old campaign in the Intercontinental. And congratulations to Al Gold, Gold Square, and as Mike Beer and I talked, and Mike was right, Marianne or Ginger, first-time starter, had trouble, didn't break well, and then came a running and wins, takes the Astoria, the two-year-old filly race. Today, of course, the boys take over, and Wesley Ward with Maven, the American Pharaoh. Speaking of Mavens, we've got our favorite Indian Maven, Satish Sanan, joining us. Satish, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? You're on form this morning.
Well, you always got to get fired up, and somebody wants to say hello to you, actually, and I've got to get a chance. Satish, here's Nick.
Satish, hello, my friend. Oh, it's Nick Zito.
How are you, Nick? Haven't seen you in a long time.
It's great. I always love seeing you in front of me on the window because I know I got to wait for 10 minutes. I make a phone call. You're the longest guy I've ever seen on a window.
I was in a meeting. And I forgot that I was supposed to do this, and I had to kick everybody out of the office to do this. So I got a fucking company to run, and you guys
have to. You're the best.
You and Ann got to come up for at Saratoga this summer. You come up a weekend.
I might do that, but I've got a crisis mode in the company, and a crisis mode that I got too much going on. I just opened an office in Zurich, and I bought a company in Toronto, I got a company in Seattle. And so one of these days, when we wrap this shit up, I'll be back in this business. If I'm
that a boy.
And we're gonna come back, but with a different attitude,
Well, and I do have to congratulate you as well on the selling the farm.
It's not congratulations. It's fucking giving shit away, I mean, I've got 40-some million in it, and I turned down $22 million a few years ago, and it was stupid, and it was burning million in years just maintaining it. But there comes a time then, you take your losses and you get on, and that's what I did. I did that with my house. I gave away my house in Clearwater. I moved closer to my office and 10 minutes from there. And this new business, Nick, and who else is with you?
Yeah.
Just you and Nick?
It's just the three of us, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, this business is just consuming me right now. And there's a lot going on, but, you know, I've got... when I focus on something, that's what I do. And I did that in the early days in the horse business, and people didn't like me, but that's okay. I still do what the fuck I want to do.
And everybody would love to have you, and they look forward to hearing from you, most importantly. Satish, I know you looked over the card a little bit. Give us a couple of thoughts about today and tomorrow.
Well, I mean, I guess the only thing today is the Belmont Gold Cup that you guys want to talk about, and unless Nick has some insight into it, I don't see the favorite get beat here. I don't see the Aqua.
I don't think so. I agree.
I think it's going to be a one heck of a. It's a tough horse. I think if he gets beat, I would think it would be Billy Marsh's horse. That's about
it. Red Knight. So Arklow and Red Knight.
That's it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's this favorites. Only Nick comes up with these goddamn 20-1 winners. You know, never gets you one. Quietly goes to the goddamn window. I've seen it. You know? Put a bundle of money and tells me and gives you bullshit. And then
if I show you what's in my pockets, you'll die. I got a stack of losing tickets. If you can believe it. But anyway, you're right. Let's get on a roll together. You're the best, Satish.
And I guess in the Belmont, I mean, I guess you want to go to Belmont.
But, sure.
What else? I mean, I did look at the cards, but again, unfortunately, I don't know whether Nick has a horse in the Belmont, but even if he did, I just think that they'll have a heck of a time beating War of Will. I just can't see it get beat.
Interesting.
I think it was a bad race in the Kentucky Derby and wasn't, you know, slop and all that. But I think if you look at his works and you look at how he ran in the Preakness, I think he'll get the distance, which normally, you know, coming out of Danjing. But he's bred on, you know, from Mare side, saddle as well. And
yep.
I would think, Nick, he would get the distance the way he ran. And,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, well, he's consistent, Satish. There's no question. Even if you look at, you throw the Derby out, he's a very consistent horse.
Well, and he came back from that Louisiana Derby incident.
Yeah.
Nobody gave him a chance at all. I mean, to succeed again at you know, in the Classic, but particularly in the Derby, and he ran obviously more than credibly, and then comes back. So. All right.
Yeah, but his works. I mean, are these works for real, though? I mean,
they're for real. That's what I was just going. I was going to comment on that, Satish. That's another thing why I say he's consistent. His works are all. Everybody that watches him work, Gary Young, when I saw him in Churchill, he told me how effortlessly this horse works.
Yeah.
But so I think again, if he gets beat, I think there's only two horses, in my opinion, who can get him beat. I think it's Billy Mott again.
Yep. Right.
You know, and then, you know, Todd may have a outside horse out there. I mean, it's not that outside, but I think he's a tap in, obviously, he gets the distance.
Intrepid Heart.
The eight horse, I'm not sure he's in the same class. But, you know, when you win those grade one consistently and you're on the board, you know, you run in the LeCompte, you run in the Risen Star, I mean, a bad trip in the Louisiana Derby, decent race in Derby. Comes back and wins and then comes out of there fresh and runs on his shit. You know, I wish I had him, but
that's right.
One of these days we will again. But those, unfortunately, you know, anybody can pick that. Even Ray Charles could pick that.
Satish, anywhere else on the card that catches your eye? Anything else that jumped off at you?
I, you know, I will give you a horse only for you, but you have to text me a definite winner. On the Belmont Day.
All okay? right, I will.
That's
I will.
Not for, that's not for public, okay? That's not for public, okay? But I really like the one before the where is the New York, the mile and a quarter. I'm just looking at this. And I think, again, it's the favorites. You know, anybody can pick that, as I said, Ray Charles. I mean, Satish is... You know, I haven't given up. I mean, I still love horses. I love handicapping because that's how I got them, put myself through colleges doing that. I lost a ton of money. But, you know, what the hell happened to my my double and triple in the goddamn derby? I was live with a huge fucking bet. I had the double. I gave it on the radio.
Okay. Yes, you did.
I gave you the big three.
Yep.
It was a $1,000 triple. It was $1,000 double.
Yep.
It was a huge ticket, and you guys took the fucking thing down.
Oh, man.
Nick, what's your opinion? Should that have come down?
No, I got in trouble. I don't think it should come down. No. 100% right. Well, look, let me tell you why. The sad thing is, he didn't get hurt. He didn't have an accident. Yes, if he did, they closed the track. They put the shade on our business. It's over. But it didn't happen. And it's 145 years. And here's what happened. When they went over the line, had the stewards just push that button, no matter which way they would have went, if they left it up or they took them down, it would have been much better. But not them calling with all their technology,
with no inquiry. Yep.
That set off a firestorm that will never be forgotten. So I agree they should have left it.
Yeah, but I think even if you watch it, I mean, I don't watch. You guys have a better eye. You look at it every single day and every single angle. I talked to Gary West. He's a very good friend of mine. He called me. He said he was going to sue these guys. I don't know whether he has.
He did.
Not,
yeah, he has. Yeah.
So the bottom line is that he actually interfered with the inside horse, the one horse. He never interfered with the outside fucking horse.
And,
there was no objections from the and that should have never come down. But it cost us a few hundred thousand dollars to what the fuck, you know.
The greatest.
Oh, my God. Satish, thank you so much, as always.
Nick, I love you. You know that,
yeah,
right?
Me too. And you come back in this game and you'll be bigger and stronger than ever because you're a winner. You always were.
We're going to do that one day, Nick.
Yes, sir.
Let me focus on what I'm doing and
good
luck to you, Nick.
Okay.
And I hope family is good. Everything is good.
Yeah, yes, sir. Thanks for asking. The same with your family. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Have a great day. I will text you that secret winner. Okay?
All right. And I'll send you one back.
Okay. All right.
The one and only.
I don't ask him every day. I don't bump him into girls' team. I don't see him in Saratoga. But you got a fucking good one. You got my number in your cell phone.
Don't worry, I got your number on my brain. Believe me.
I never lost your number.
Are you crazy? I'm not going to lose your number.
That's a good one one day.
Yes, sir. Thank you, champ.
All the best. Thank you.
Unbelievable. A vintage Satish Sanan appearance and... You can't beat him. Nick, thank you. I want to get a picture of the three, actually. Well, that makes it easier for the when I post things up. And now the problem is we're backlit here. You know what I'm going to do? Stay right there. Stay where you are. I'm going to come around. Hold on. Come out this way. And, pull that over. See, this is magic of live radio. And there we go. Beautiful. Well done. All right. Nick, thank you so much. Unbelievable. So great. All right. Back over the other side. There we go. Jimmy, pull me over there. Thank you. Well, I was trying to catch your attention. The two of you were fully engaged in conversation with Ron Anderson hanging and Chad Summers and Pat Kelly, my man Gary, and your annual Friday visit and here on the track apron and very popular additions to the scene. And Jimmy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Hammer, pull that stick up. There you go. You got it. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be on a backside where people are smiling and telling stories.
Yes, as opposed to the other option.
Beautiful morning to be out here.
It's been gorgeous. Now we're free and clear today, tomorrow, and even into Sunday. And before we do anything else, Jimmy, I cannot thank you enough for the evening we had. This is always a special week, and as we wind down Triple Crown, you taking me and Gary and Hammer to Rao's was just special. Thank you.
No problem. It was my pleasure, and. You wouldn't believe how many times. Apparently, you posted a photo of us there and people now have been blowing my phone up that...
So you ratted him out.
It was like, hey, I didn't get the invite. Hey, do you get a table there? When can I go?
Oh, and I'm sorry. So, was that a mistake? I should have kept this one.
I said, that's why I don't put names in there. I says, you're in trouble now.
So I just said, you're on the list. So there's a lot of people on the list.
There we go. And, you know, gratuities go a long way in moving up the list.
Correct. We take cash prizes. Not true for those of you out there. Most people that sent those texts, the list is very long, and I will be dead and buried before we get to it. But anyway.
It's like season tickets for the Giants, right?
Yep.
Nobody, that list hasn't moved in forever.
Yeah.
Rick, you couldn't get a course to Louisville this year, and you knew at a certain point during the Triple Crown run that you probably were going to only make New York, but a good way to wind down the three-year-old classic season.
Well, you know what? I think in the whole scheme of things, this is probably, I was thinking 15 out of the last 16 years, Jimmy and I made a point to come here, and we used to do the Derby every year, and we did the Derby in Monmouth Park this year, but the Belmont has turned into be my favorite of the three.
Nice.
And more so maybe just because of the fun that we have in New York, running around seeing people, and when there's a Triple Crown going, it rocks, and when there's not a Triple Crown, it still rocks. So Belmont's a tough one to miss.
No doubt. And you know, for us, even in a year like this where, you know, the Triple Crown was evident immediately that even if maximum security had stayed up, I'm not convinced that they would have spun back in 2 weeks. But meanwhile, here we are, potential for a dual classic winner or a third, separate winner. And Bill Mott with a chance to go down in history with two classics with two different horses.
Yeah, nobody's ever done that, right?
No, it's done.
I thought the same thing. I wrote a little note. Boy, I wonder when that's happened before. Then
Lucas.
I wrote Privman's article that happened 2 years ago.
Right, and also...
With Todd and Always Dreaming and Taprit.
Yes.
But it's still quite a feat.
Absolutely, and the thing that nobody's really talked about is the chance for Cassie to do it. Because Sir Winston may be a little bit of a clever outsider in here.
Yeah, no, I think it's a wide open race. And again, the mile and a half and trying to factor in the distance of that extra quarter mile is going to be interesting.
But speaking of Cassie, I mean, let's give him a few pats on the back for having this horse fit for these 5 weeks. I mean, after the Derby.
Well, after the Louisiana situation, it's astounding. I mean, when everybody wrote him off, they can't run that horse in the Derby.
Yep.
And we talked about that. And the same thing with this filly that's running in the Acorn, the Serengeti.
Yep.
Coming off a horrific run. And all of a sudden, we talked about that. When you got good trainers and they're putting those horses back in spots, guess what? They're ready to run. And sure enough. And then War of Will, I think. Boy, did that shut the crowd up when he won the Preakness. You haven't heard the talk about the Derby since. So I think this is just a tremendous training job, and he's just getting this horse ready. You can see how fit he is because he hasn't worked the horse in between.
No doubt. Let me do this, guys. Because we got thrown off a few minutes, let me slip Dave O'Rourke and Bat McKenna in. We'll do their fairly brief, austere visit, and then we'll do the handicapping together. All right?
You got it.
All right, that's what we're going to do, and we'll. There you go, and we'll come right back. This is why I was trying to get you guys over before. There we go. No, are you going to participate? You're not going to participate? Of course, you're going to participate. This is we got to equal opportunity. We want We want the house mouthpiece to be able to talk and come forward, and then he clams right up, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course we're on.
Hey, Steve.
A pleasure to bring on Pat McKenna I noticed, by the way, this morning when I put out the preview of the show, it's PC McKenna. Is there any message in that?
No, it's my middle name, Carl.
This is convenient. Patrick Carl? PC McKenna, if you're not following Pat, he's a tremendous follow on Twitter. And then there's David O'Rourke, who is on Twitter but has yet to you got that one
tweet.
That one solo tweet.
Yeah.
And it was in response to Travis Stone.
Yes, it was.
What was the perspective about? What was the backstory on that?
I forgot. What
it's something funny, actually.
Yeah, he was saying something about our the lifestyle working on the track, and I think I used the term carny.
Yes, you did. You did. You exactly. That's what it was.
Around. We move with the show. People always ask me, "Where's your office?" And it's always the live track, so we move around quite a bit with the show.
Exactly, and the show was going to move a little earlier than usual to Saratoga. And Dave, we can do the big, broad state of the association conversation upstate, but want to welcome you. It's our first chance to talk on air.
First time I've ever been on air.
On any kind of air?
Any kind of air.
Really?
Yeah, really.
They haven't been coming
at
you.
I've been on television, but not on radio.
All right. Well, there you go.
It's technically radio, right?
It really is. It's satellite radio. Yeah, it's satellite radio. Dave, of course, the new, the most recent president of the New York Racing Association.
Current.
I've been around here a while, but
yeah, me too.
And you have too. And that the opportunity for you to ascend to the position, the timing was really good because you've been doing all the back planning for the future of NYRA at all the facilities. And from that standpoint, it almost felt like Chris Kay did what he was brought on to do, which was extricate NYRA from state control. And deserves credit for that endlessly.
Sure.
Because it was a real uncertainty where we were headed. And Chris got that done. And the whole industry, I've said this for years, yes. And, his unique government, quasi-public experiences really played into it. And from that standpoint, everyone should be appreciative. The next era, though, for the association, the remodeling of this building and whatever we're going to be doing downstate with two racetracks and, the ongoing really glory of Saratoga has been in your hands. And so, for you to be able to have your hand on the wheel going into this, new era, it's really appropriate.
I appreciate that. It's really nice of you to say. I've worked the last 5-6 years with the TV side, kind of building assets on where are we going as a business? What can we do in terms of a sport to get out there more, for lack of a better term? Distribution. So now that I'm on this role, I kind of have to broaden my perspective. And, we're in this building. It's a beautiful building, but it's huge.
And aging.
And it works really well on Saturday in terms of the large crowd. But the challenge is, what do you do on the normal Saturday? And, we're going through that right now, and I appreciate you saying I'm the right person, but it's the right team. There's an entire executive team here, and we brought in architects. So it's going to be a 6 to 9 month process to work through what are the iterations that we can do with Belmont, because it's not a simple puzzle to solve.
No. What is the status of the hockey arena, which has been delayed a little bit? And, of course, the scheduling of all of that work, it was going to play into a lot of decision-making in terms of scheduling, in terms of the 5-day a week at Saratoga, taking advantage of the opportunity to do that, still running the same 40-day schedule. But it won't be until Labor Day that people realize what a great move that is going to prove out to be. I mean, for horsemen, for owners, for horse players, for everybody, that extra day to breathe and recoup.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope it works out well for everyone. It's a test. And from our knowledge and everything we're hearing, the construction here should start in July. So it was the right move at the right time in terms of pushing the meet to 5 days, extending it in terms of just the length that we're up there to get out of the way down here. And, we'll see how it rolls. You know, there's a lot of different constituents up there that are impacted by what we're doing. So,
and it should be positively.
We should be, but, you know, what we need to do is we need to understand how does it impact us inside the gates and then outside the gates of the town and make sure it works. It's Saratoga's a jewel, so you got to be really careful when you change anything up there. And, you know, we're doing everything very prudent and cautious, so.
Well, the new building, for those, and I don't know how often you've had a chance to buzz up and just take in, you know, where things stand, but it's going to fit in as if it was there all along, and it really gives you and the hospitality team, you know, a chance to accommodate players with modern amenities. And that's just, I know people get, you know, outraged about that concept, but it's also a necessity, and it enhances everybody's experience from the handle to, you know, people that are being introduced to the game. Yeah, there's just so many positives associated with it.
Yeah, I think, and I appreciate you saying that, the aesthetic of the building fits.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks good from the outside, but once you're inside of it and once you get a chance to see the windows and the views and the track, it's amazing. It's going to be a really cool building. It's going to be there for a really long time.
Forever. There we go. Forever. And mentioning the July, so the construction behind the backyard, that'll start.
Yeah, it's
when
on,
everybody leaves.
On target, yeah, mid-July, I believe.
And what do they, you know, what do they expect from their side? And then how do you expect to integrate progress or the commencement of a remodel to the building here?
Well, what are they going to do there at first? Dig a big hole.
Right. Yeah. They're going to build for an arena. They'll sink the ice. Exactly. But how do you foresee, and what is the current timetable to, you know, to merge their work and what's going to happen in this building?
Yeah, the first integration you'll see is in the backyard,
right?
Because of where the location of the arena. So we're working through with the architects and their team on, you know, how do we make that boundary line seamless and fit the aesthetic. I believe the arena will have an aesthetic that will complement Belmont. So
nice.
It'll look good. Yeah, it's going to look really cool. In terms of what we're going to do ourselves,
yes.
Likely the first stage of ours would be the tracks. Because that's something we might tackle next year. You know, this is still all in the planning phase,
right.
But that may be phase one. And then in terms of the building itself, my preference would be a phased approach. But, you know, these are logistics that they really need to be lined up. You get me really early in the process.
That's fine.
That's fine. I would, if I'm a betting man,
yeah.
Which I'm not, because I'm not allowed to, the tracks would be the first thing that we tackle.
How in tune are you and those that are, you know, interfacing with the horsemen and the horsemen's group, Joe Applebaum and company? I've got to ask about the potential for a synthetic surface for the long-term opportunity probably to have winter racing here.
That's a really good question. It's we don't know if we'll be racing here in the winter. There's no definitive on aqueduct.
There really isn't. Huh? There's no.
But you don't want to make a decision that would tie someone's hands in the future. So as you're looking at the tracks, the questions start to pop up. Well, do you put a tunnel in? And if you put a tunnel in, you have to make room for that fourth track, technically. Then there's another thought. Well, we have dirt, turf. And the problem with winter racing is shadows, freezing track. What happens if the middle track was dirt? Could that be converted to synthetic in the future?
Mm-hmm.
So these are all
interesting
layouts that need to be put in front of us. And, you know, these are, I have some input on this. I rely heavily on, like, Glenn Kozak, Martin Panza. You know, these guys have been doing this their entire careers. So there's a lot of iterations to go through. And then we bring it to the board.
The horsemen.
And the horsemen are involved. They're in the middle.
Oh, absolutely. And the horsemen have been very encouraged, just the easiest word, I suppose, with the signs they've seen from you and your outreach. Because there, I mean, honestly, was a bit of a disconnect with most recent management and the horsemen. And you seem very much not just in tune, but interested in having a dialogue with every party that's out there, with horse players, with the industry counterparts and you know, the industry marketing and business partners. You know, from that standpoint, I don't know if kindler, gentler is the right term, but you know, you've got in the time that you've been spending at NYRA, which is what it's 10, 11 years. You've had this opportunity to really learn all the other parts of the racing business, of running a racetrack operation. And you can see already the kind of the side benefits.
Well, yeah, and then the dialogue with the horsemen and the owners, the trainers, as we're looking at what we tend to do here at Belmont, that input's invaluable.
You know, having their support.
Then the players. I mean, you know, I've been on the Paramutual ADW side for years. So the passion that comes from our fan base. And there's different stakeholders. But, you know, for years my main focus was on the gambling side. And just the passion that comes from that side. I mean, you're going to hear it. You change something, you try something, there's opinions out there. They're great because you're getting the feedback that people are invested, you know, in terms of their the attention that they're paying to what we're doing. So that's been invaluable to me on that side of the business, trying to take the same focus over to more the hospitality, F&B, the areas of the business that now I'm kind of expanding more into. And that's where you get the questions from the owners and the trainers on it. Well, if you're going to bring out your clients or you're going to come out to see your horse, what kind of amenities are you looking for? I mean, those are pretty straightforward questions, and these are things that we're doing right now to correlate with how we're planning out this building.
What do you sense, and what have you thought even in advance of taking the helm, has or is NYRA's most underutilized asset?
That's a really good question. Well, underutilized? Actually, you could say Belmont. Actually, the building itself, I mean, it's massive.
Yep.
And if you just walk the floors, what could be done? I mean, if you've ever been in the area where my office is, there's balconies going over the paddock. I mean, that would be an incredible restaurant. So there's a lot we can do with this building as its shell. So I'm kind of excited to see what we can do with that.
Do you and do you have any? Is there any restrictions in terms of utilizing the building long term as part of the deal with the Islanders and with that group? Is there the potential to whether it's a shopping arcade and that kind of thing, office space? Why couldn't it be used as office space?
Well, there's a
in some cases
roughly 1 million square feet.
A million square feet.
Roughly. You know, these are round numbers here. And the clubhouse is about a third of that. So I think the first phase of what we do here will focus on the clubhouse, on the amenities for our customers specifically, what we would need day in and day out, and then to expand for the Belmont Stakes. But then that still leaves 600,000-700,000 square feet, phase two, phase three. You know, right now it's the focus is on our core business. I think once we achieve that, then we can expand our thoughts on, well, what do we do with this underutilized section?
Nice. Nice. Well, I have felt from word go that it is an exciting proposition. And, you know, just having people come to the property, Islander fans and everything else that facility will bring, concerts and trade shows.
Yeah.
Having people walk into the grounds for the first time and then getting curious about what's on the other side and the opportunities, which I'm sure there's going to be for, you know, afternoon racing and evening, you know, people are going to can come early and hang around for racing, go to a show, whatever it's going to be. It's a bolt of electricity.
Yeah, and you mix sports betting in with that. Now you've got, you know, a facility that's going to be active, hopefully all the time.
Exactly. Where do things stand with the legislation? It seems like a push and pull going on in Albany on that front.
Yeah, we're not right now. There's a bill out there that would allow us to become an affiliate, so we'd be involved in that sense. But it's unclear on the constitutionality on exactly what they want to do. But we do feel confident that whatever does happen in New York, we can participate, and we think that's a huge thing for our game. You know, we've been in sports betting for a long time. Like that's basically how horse racing's main economic driver has been. So we feel that, you know, expansion of sports betting will bring more people into that area, and it will give us an opportunity to cross-sell our product. I think it's a natural, really.
Are you in active negotiations with one of the wagering outlets, one of the bookshops that...
We speak to many of them all the time, because not just the New York business and actually the books, and they come in and, you know, they might want to run one. But in terms of getting racing on sports betting platforms outside of New York, nationwide, we've been engaged for a couple of years, really, in these type of conversations, because we've viewed this, and it actually dovetails with what we're trying to do on television, as how do we get to a broader audience? We think we have a great product, but how do we get to distribution channels where we can broaden the base and, you know, bring in more people?
Well, certainly you've brought more eyes to the product, and the expansion of Naira Bets as a wagering platform, the coordinated effort on the television side, and essentially to have a Saturday-style network broadcast now up to, what, 115, 125 days a year now?
Roughly, yeah.
Right?
I mean, the credit's got to go to Tony Alavato on a lot of this. You know, I was there with him, but he put these deals together. He's put us in a position where, yeah, we have over 500 hours of broadcast.
How many homes now? What percentage of the country can watch Belmont now and Saratoga now?
I believe it's 70 million.
I knew there was a 7. I wasn't sure if it was 70% of the country or
70 million
households, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And it, you know, that part of it, and broadcasting Saratoga all 40 days is, you know, it's something that I don't think, I think widely the industry is so used to simulcast.
Yeah.
That the dots haven't connected. That,
I mean, if we would have talked about this 5 years ago, neither of us would have believed we had gotten there.
Right. I mean, the 2.5 hours, averaging 2.5 hours a day for what is essentially the shows that NBC and ABC and any other sports network, you know,
now
produce.
We're doing full card.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, it's amazing. So, and that, nobody's really, we haven't been updated on the growth of Naira Bets overall as percentage of ADW nationwide. Is that for public?
Well, but yeah, I'd pull Alvado on. He can probably give you.
He always has an excuse. Oh, I can't today. Oh, I can't today. Oh,
it's
today.
Doing really well. But, you know, the question for us is, you know, we have to look ahead. So in 2, 3, 4 years, what's the landscape look like with is ADW a standalone product, or is it an integrated product with other sports books? You know, it's a question we don't have an answer for yet, but we're definitely looking.
Well, you've been very quietly behind the scenes answering those kinds of questions in so many areas of Naira's business, and now out in the open for everybody to know what a great asset to the whole industry David O'Rourke is. David, I appreciate this, and you know how much we're rooting for you and for the house. So,
All right, thank you.
I appreciate
it. Enjoy the weekend.
Not at all. David O'Rourke and Pat, we didn't hear. Pat's gone, actually, so I can't even turn to Pat and get Pat's thoughts. Pretty funny. We're going to stay right here, and I appreciate Dave taking the time, and he'll have a busy weekend. It should be terrific. The pair, the entry mates, coming back into the fold. There we go. Jimmy Ventura and Hammer back with us. Seth Merrow, by the way, is right over to my left. And Seth has set up shop here at Belmont. He is. He's my television, Saratoga television partner. And he's over there. And for some reason, he's got one of these green tablecloth tables, and for some reason, he's got it turned the wrong way, which is really that's essentially Seth in a nutshell. Instead of having the Belmont Park logo in front. No, no. There we go. That's it. Instead of having the Belmont Park logo in front, he's got it behind him. That's Seth. That's so Seth. That's over that way, right?
Might be doing something on the side. You know, you don't know.
Well, we'll try during a break, because I didn't talk to Seth on Wednesday. So we'll try to get Seth over to say hi and get his Belmont thoughts as well. So an added voice. I appreciate you taking the pause there, because the opportunity to talk. We always have the state of the association visit.
Right. You need to do that.
And let me think. Dave got a kick out of my saying the current president. Dave and Chris Kay and Charlie Hayward. And well, Charlie I had for a long time. Charlie was a good long run. And Barry Schwartz was before me. So really, in 14 years of the show, there's only been three. Presidents.
You want to compare that to the group that I used to
how
work
many
for?
Did you? How many of you worked under for?
In 18 years, I worked for 12 bosses.
In 18 years.
So they would come in, and we would take the hourglass and just turn it over.
Like sands through the hourglass.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly.
But,
and if you lined them all up, nobody would know who they were.
But just talking to I think this is probably a good move.
Oh, he's got energy. Terrific.
He's sounds like he's not afraid to try something, and if it doesn't work, no big deal. You need some young, energetic people in positions like he's got, and just speaking with him for the few minutes that I did, I'm impressed.
What's invaluable about a guy like David is that, as he explained, I mean, he didn't really go into depth, but in the 11 years that he was here, he worked in four or five different
departments.
Yep. and bailiwicks on the racetrack. So, I mean, there isn't anything, whether it's negotiations, contract negotiations, and did a lot of the TV stuff and the ADW stuff. So he knows what's going on with simulcast partners and signal negotiations. He knows what's going on with with NYTHA and with having to deal with all the expenses, the workman's comp issue that's dogging everybody. He understands all of that. He's been in all the contract stuff. He's been in the long-term planning. So he understands everything that's happening with Genting and with now with Belmont and
super well rounded.
Yeah, he's curious. He's not somebody that isn't interested in an area if he doesn't know about it. He'll go and learn. And the timing was perfect, because I don't want to say, outlived his usefulness, but Chris Kay accomplished what he was brought in for, and it was the timing ended up being very good. I know it feels like an embarrassment, but whatever. It's worked out to the benefit of NYRA.
Yep.
That's good.
And now for the weekend at NYRA with Belmont Stakes and gambling.
Here's Jimmy and Rick.
And here's some gambling opportunities that are actually going to occur at the venue. It seems like a chalk fest going to be coming up, right?
There's a lot of forces that look tough. Yes.
I mean, today, my buddies from Chicago were supposed to fly out. They have a horse running in the Tremont Memorable. Yep. And I know that Wesley's Maven looks crazy, ran a ridiculous sheet number, but two-year-olds vary so much and jump from place to place. Maven, obviously, I mean, I haven't seen a two-year-old run in April that ran an eight on the sheets before. That's pretty quick. But my friends couldn't make the trip out because one of their wives got sick, so Judy, get well. But Memorable in the Tremont, and I'm going to play in a double to Whitmore, actually, in the True North. So I'm sure there's some other races, the New York Handicap, the Belmont Gold Cup. I know that route racing on grass and things like that are the thing of the future, or the world is wanting it. It's slow to me, and it doesn't get my blood running as much. So, but it's fun to watch. You have any opinions today?
You know, I tell you what, for the first time on trip back here, I think I've read more menus than I have racing forms to get ready for the weekend. So I didn't look at too much today. But the True North, that True North has been almost like a diving board for horses doing well in that and then, you know, springing up and having a great years and career. So I'm not sure if there's one of those in here. You got Catalina.
Sadler, right?
You got Catalina Cruz. We're just going to talk about him, who was, you know, 4-for-4 going into the Breeders' Cup. Gone to Churchill, and we all know, you know, John has had a ton of horses over the years, and but had just terrible luck with getting that win in the Breeders' Cup. And after this happened, I'm sure he wasn't feeling great.
And shipping out of town,
yeah, correct.
And it seems like that bugaboo has been now erased. In fact, I think his most recent trips away from California have been largely successful.
Right, and so on this day, I think this was on the Friday, and I can just see him going, oh, geez, you know, with Accelerate sitting there the next day going, you know, he's going to win. So this had to be quite a disappointment for him, and I don't think there was anything just majorly wrong with him. I think he just said, you know what, we're going to take a break. And he did take a break, and interestingly enough, he probably could have said, you know what, let's go for the Met Mile.
That was his plan, right, all along.
Get a
but
prep.
I think he called an audible to a little bit easier spot.
Let's get a prep in and do the Met. And then when that didn't happen, I don't think you want to come in here off a layoff, especially in running into those buzzsaws. So he's coming back at the sprint distance. He can do it. You know, he's fresh off the bus, and I think he's got a shot in here. Might be over bet. But, you know, Whitmore, one of those horses that wins when you don't really think he's going to win. I think he's sitting up for a good one here. And I like Jason Service's horse on the outside as a little bit of a horse moving up.
I included Mr. Dougie Fresh.
At 15 to 1, the price.
I know.
You know, he did win in the slop last time. I just think he's one of those ones that is heading in the right direction.
I don't disagree. I keyed off of Duchere. I went Duchere, Catalina Cruiser, Dougie Fresh, and Whitmore. I want to give everybody the quick landscape on the 20-cent two-day pick six. It starts with the True North. Then it skips over to the Gold Cup. Then the four races that comprise the late pick four tomorrow, the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, the Stevens, the Met, the Manhattan, and the Belmont. And it's going to be forced out. It has nothing to do with today's carryover. There's a $25,000, $2 pick six carryover today comes from, you know, yesterday. That pool is the normal $2 pick six. It might be worth going after today. My selections are up pre-scratch at both Derby Trail and at the At the Races website. But the 20-cent project, and it's a test, as we talked the other day, opportunity to see how, you know, it's not just for New Yorkers, but there's a real chance that they might use this at Saratoga this summer. They got the approval from the state gaming commission last year, and this is the first experiment with a quote-unquote jackpot, but it's not going to go beyond tomorrow. Okay. It's strictly these six races, 20 cents, and I think it'll probably do pretty well. It's a fun concept for this setting.
The key to those bets is getting the word out. When they start and what comprises them. And, you know, maybe they'll be handing out little, you know, even if it's a sheet of paper when they come to the tracks, you can tell. The timing's more important. It's the Belmont 5th. Well, that's three different times across the country. You need a time, and these are good. You know, we had talked about doing something like this years and years and years ago, called it the Split Six, where we were talked about doing three races at Saratoga and three races at Del Mar. Kind of behind the scenes, just that was way too progressive for, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But something like that could really, you know, drive interest for both of the tracks. I think it's good. I did want to mention one more horse that I was looking for today in the New York, the Filly Mare race. I guess I just now saw the price on her. And that's Vexatious, who previously trained by Neil Drysdale.
Yep.
And Jack has taken over Stisterson, who got into the mainstream with the win on Preakness Day. And so this filly's been off for a while. She won some good races for Neil and had a comeback on a soft turf. I don't think was expected to do much and didn't. But the 15-1 here with Giroux back on, I think the horse is definitely worth a look in the New York handicap today.
The two Chads figure big. And,
of course.
I used, and we talked yesterday with, had the conversation with Mike Beer. He's going to be with us later. But Sepp Herrasentahe for Mark Henning seemed like a good option if you're worried about somebody to use with. It just feels like homeric and competition of ideas. It feels like they're the A's.
Of course,
Vexatious to me felt like a bit of a C. But in the late pick four and pick five, I tried to find a way to, just in case, to use Sepp Herrasentahe. But it just feels like it's a race that
it's Phillies and Mares. It's a stake and it's on the turf.
Yeah,
so what
Chad,
is it?
Yeah.
It feels like exactly. Chad Brown.
Exactly. Let's turn to Saturday and Hammer with us and Jimmy Ventura. We'll go from Belmont. We'll do what we always do. We'll work our way backward from the feature. And Jimmy, your Belmont plan?
I'm going to go with War of Will. This is no surprise. A lot of people are going with Tacitus. But I think he'll be close to the pace. I think he likes to go the distance. His numbers aren't as fast maybe as Tacitus, but it's a mile and a half, that extra quarter mile. I think he's going to get it. And Spinoff, I think I'd put underneath as a potential. It's the Hard Spun, right? That's the Hard Spun at Todd Trains.
Uh-huh.
I think he'll go a route of ground. And then one of the horses that ran a big race, but that'll be it. I mean, I'm to be honest with you, I'm really not excited about the Belmont.
Fair enough.
But I'll go with War of Will. I bet him in the future book to win the Derby. Unfortunately, that was the one that he didn't win. But that's my horse.
Hate to sound boring, but I'm on that bandwagon.
Are you really?
Yeah, with Mark and I'm just really impressed with what he's done with the horse and the fact that he has so much confidence. He didn't even work the horse. He just kind of kept him going. It's not unprecedented, but he's in good shape. As we know, the race is a mile and a half, and you need to be near the lead, Turner for home, to win. And he's got that. He's got that going for him. Tacitus, fresh off the bench, come on, it's Bill Mott. He knows exactly what he's doing. Point for this race. I mean, I got those two in there, and the one that I came up with is the Mark's other horse, Sir Winston, as maybe the one that that gets in the way, and somewhere in the trifecta. So, like I said, not a whole lot to get terribly excited about. I was glad to see Mark throw his horse back in there, Bourbon War. So maybe that means something. Go back a couple and maybe he'll be all right in here, but I'm with the two favorites, unfortunately, and Sir Winston is a little bit of a backup bomb
as your alternative.
Yes,
I like
my
it.
Alternative.
All right,
don't let Dale Romans bite you in the ass with that fast coming late.
Well, and actually Dale said he thought he'd be a little closer because that's one of the weird phenomena about this race in general is the assumption everybody looks at deep closers and essentially, they're if they're a one run closer, it's muted. Their punch is muted because the horses up front aren't going as fast.
It's hard to run into.
Exactly,
absolutely.
You're not getting a pace to run into per se, and so if horses are going to go 48 and four for the half, I mean, big-time thoroughbreds can clip along at that without much pressure. So even if a horse is closing, the ones that they're chasing haven't had the starch taken out of them. And that's why the deep closer has not typically done as well. But what Dale said is that this is a horse that can get into stride pretty quickly and maintain pace. So if he is if he's within closer striking distance, he may not have the same approach. The one thing I keep hearing, there's a school of player, and I'll bring this up with Paul Matisse, who's typically really in tune with this. There's a school of player that are completely against War of Will and Everfast, because of the rail at Pimlico. That they're insisting that it was an absolute gold rail, and Jay actually yesterday is pretty convinced that you had a serious advantage, hugging the rail.
Yep.
So
you know what? That could be true. Who's to know that the nine path might not be golden here on tomorrow?
I would hold a little bit more weight with that if it wasn't a mile and a half race coming up.
That's the other thing about this racetrack. It's the breadth of it, and you know the way in which everybody can find their own way around, more or less. That's why the draw is fairly inconsequential here. All right, well, let's...
And you could just, on Everfast with Dale, if you look back in the PPs, the race before the Kentucky Jockey Club is a two-year-old. He was close to the pace. He can show some early licks. So if he wants to get him in the game early, I could see that happen.
And it becomes a question if Saez can finish with him. That becomes the next question. Let's look at the Manhattan and... Satish was on earlier, and I think everybody acknowledges you start with bricks and mortar, and then, you know, it depends on how much you want to spend in the multis.
There's 10. We got four Chads, right, in there?
Yes.
And so one of them has to be bricks and mortar. I looked at Robert Bruce. I think he's his second race back. I like Ortiz getting on him, and... Kieran's horse, that would have been a nice big day if he would have held on in Kentucky, Kerbon. And so I think he's going to be there at a price as well. So those are the three. Probably use those on the, you know, on the pick fours, pick five tickets. And once again, it's which Chad is going to get there.
I agree with you. I think it's bricks and mortar. Start there. And Kieran's horse underneath, Kerbon. Those are the two. Again, I'm going to spread very much there if I'm betting in a pick four or the 20-cent pick six that Steve mentioned. I think I'm just going to be singling in a few spots, and I think I'll single bricks and mortar.
I'm of that mind too for the 2 day. I felt like that was the place that you needed to make a stand.
Yep.
The Metropolitan, and obviously the advantage, and who was it? I think it was Jay yesterday. You know, really stressed the point that the Met is going to be seen to open essentially the NBC telecast tomorrow, and isn't that a better scenario than being run on Memorial Day when only simulcast people were going to see the Met Mile, and they're going to be treated to. Ideally, a show. I mean, it seems impossible to me. Even if you think Mattioli or Promises Fulfilled gets a somewhat easy lead, it seems impossible to me that anybody wires this group. But we say that often, and the gates open, and somehow you know somebody gets away with a 22-4 opening quarter, and at this level that's slow. So I don't know. I think this is going to be wildly entertaining and
most competitive race I think in the 2 days for sure.
I mean, other than like a derby where it's just the spectacle part, this is is a few and far between scenario.
I was talking to my brother Tommy, and I was like, have you seen the Met? Have you seen the Met? And getting excited about the PPs and the horses that are running in it, it's pretty great. Obviously, he's Cole Front is an OBS graduate that I think Steve Young bought for $500,000. If I recall correctly, the horse worked 3/8 and ran off going to the pole and galloped out like 5/8 and 59 and change. So he was really impressive. Coming from Dubai, I mean, you've seen that done with, I think, Mind Your Biscuits has come off that and run well. McKenzie turning back, Mattioli. It's a super, super race. But my two horses are, although Mattioli I cashed very well on the last time, I think I'm going to go with McKenzie and Cole Front.
Well, it's interesting. We talk about McKenzie, and, you know, after the San Anita Handicap mile and a quarter race where he lost by a nose to Giftbox, I guess he had a choice to make whether to stay in that long division or ease back, and Bob chose to go the other direction. He eased back to the Ali Sheba in a mile and 16th race. And if you go back and if you didn't see that race, you want to go back and take a look at that race. It was a very, very peculiar way this horse ran his race. I mean, he was in front, and all of a sudden, it looked like he was done on the turn.
Came back.
And Mike was just sitting chilly, and all of a sudden he said, all right, let's go now. And he just came back and blew him off. So sometimes you're a little bit worried when they go from those distance races back. And so another horse in here is Pavel, who is doing the same thing. I mean, he's been running a mile and eighth, mile and a quarter races all over. It's odd that they both decided to go to the shorter distance, which leaves that long division, I mean, just wide open, wide open if these two stay down here. But that being said, McKenzie's got to be the horse to beat. It doesn't mean he's going to win, but I mean, I've been a Mattioli fan. For some reason, I watched that first race, his allowance race at Oaklawn. Then we talked about him about in the Count Fleet, and then the 2-1 was a gift last time. I think if it was a two-turn mile, maybe not so much. So I really like Mattioli in here. I think he can sit off, maybe. Promises Fulfilled. It looks like he doesn't need the lead, but he's going to be up there.
I think Promises Fulfilled is the speed, actually.
Right, exactly. I think he can sit off of him. You know, I like a kind of a horse that nobody's talked much about in here on the outside looking in. Todd's horse, Prince Lucky. Going to go ahead and toss that sloppy finish last time. He looks like a true miler, and I like the price on there. I'm going to be looking at him to be close to the pace and maybe get the first jump on some of the closers.
You know, I'm glad you brought him up because I can tell you that going into or coming out of Florida, and I know that people will say, Todd at Gulfstream, he was a horse that, as we were at Churchill, they were raving. Mike Welch said he was working like a crazy horse. And then the Westchester, if you do right off the wet track, he's dirtied up, as Andy likes to say. And I mean, I was stunned. I didn't see the Westchester live, and I had to wait until I went back to watch. It's a point well made, Hammer, that if he gets back to, you know, the effort in February at Gulfstream, he's a player in here.
Yep.
He's a player at a price, I honestly think McKenzie is tough, and you know, Mattioli as well. But I love that 12-1 on the morning line. I like Johnny V on there, of course, for the big, you know. And I got it. I mean, in a day where it looks like it's kind of chalk filled, I think you got to pick some races like this one and maybe the Woody Stevens and take a shot, maybe the Acorn, and take a shot with some prices. Or these horizontal bets are going to be nothing.
Let's talk about the Woody.
If I get 4-1 on Complexity, I'll be a happy camper. I think that, you know, the two horses that ran really, really fast are, you know, Chad's other horse down on the fence, and Mind Control's been running really well, but I just think the horses that Complexity beat, Code of Honor and Call Paul and the Champagne, you toss the Breeders' Cup. Is this horse going to be 4-1, or is he the favorite?
Well, you do have a Baffert, you do have Mind Control, you do have the other Chad, so money will spread around.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
The money's going to spread around.
You see Bob's horse, and every time this race reminds me of Bayern,
right?
That I don't think we talked about, but I think he crushed here at 10-1 before Bayern was Bayern, and you know, I don't think much better is Bayern horse. I was wondering where Mucho Gusto was. Maybe I missed something. I thought he'd be perfect for this.
He's running.
It's not one of the derbies, I'm sure. Ohio Derby or Indiana Derby. Or
when's the Sham?
The Sham. Sham. We were Sham was
not
running,
the Sham. Then there was
January.
Something. I just saw his.
Did you?
I just saw something on XBTV about where he was.
I
headed.
Just thought this would be perfect for him. But much better as a speedball. Looks like he needs the lead. I don't know if he's going to be able to hold up. So not too encouraged by that. I think Greg Sacco has done a wonderful job with Mind Control. He's resisted the temptation after winning the Gotham to go on and hit the Derby trail and did the right thing. Turns back, stays for the Bayshore. And obviously this is the race that they've had in mind the whole time. 5-2 is a fair price. He might even drift up a little bit with some of the competition. I think he's the horse to beat in here. I have no problem, you know, no checking out with him. I'm looking at the two because of the history of the way the horses ran coming out of Oaklawn over the past over Derby weekend and Preakness weekend. There's a couple horses here coming out of the Bachelor, Nitros and Landeskog. One from O'Neill, one from Steve Asmussen. I think one of those two are worthy of a look at a price as well. I think that race was a very good race there, and you know. Wendell Fong on the outside. I heard some people talking about it on the other side, but I'm not big about betting horses off slop, so not him. So I'm more of a mind control guy, and you know, take a shot in here with a couple of horses from Arkansas.
Fair enough.